Thought it'd be a good time to talk to Bruce Y. Lee, who is the executive director of FICOR and a professor at SUNY Grad School of Public Health and Health Policy. Bruce, thanks for returning with us again. Let me ask you first about this AstraZeneca stuff. Fortunately for us in the States, we have not relied on the AstraZeneca vaccine so far. But what is it that we're hearing that their data may have been misstated?
Yeah, Mitch, there was a concern that the data that they released information on a press release that indicated there was data on the safety and the efficacy of the vaccine, and it showed a efficacy that was in the 79%. But then the Data Safety Monitoring Board, which is a group of experts that are appointed that are supposed to be separate from the clinical trial and are supposed to oversee the trial results and how the trial is being conducted, raised concerns. They said, wait, you might be releasing just part of the data and not all of the data. And just, they used the word cherry picking, that there's potentially cherry picking the data so that you're choosing the results from the more positive portion of the trial participants and not including all the data and that the actual.
So in other words, their numbers were not as good as advertised.
Yeah.
Now this comes comes on the heels of a pause in the AstraZeneca vaccine in Europe because of blood clot suspicion. And where are we on that?
Yeah, there's been a lot of twists and turns with the AstraZeneca vaccine. You know, one of the latest was that there's this concern that there's blood clots may be related to it's a very few small number of participants. So the people who got the vaccine. So they're doing this out of caution. I just want to emphasize it's not like a large number, but the question is there a small number of people that may potentially get blood clots from getting the vaccine? This latest trial data is supposed to say no, that doesn't appear to be a risk, but we really have to go back to the data to take a look at it.
Well, of course, the larger question that gets raised by this is there any possibility that these other ones, the Pfizer, the Moderna, the Johnson & Johnson, that stories are going to come out on them about, oh, well, they may have pushed numbers or rushed numbers, or we're going to start seeing some side effects from them as more people get it. And this is all kind of the price you pay for going at warp speed.
Yeah, it's really important for each of the companies to make sure that their data is reviewed by other people. And make sure everything, you know, all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. You know, Pfizer did submit their data to the New England Journal, and then it was reviewed by other scientists, et cetera. So that's the way you really want to go with this. You don't want to make announcements before you've actually had other people review the data. So each of the companies may be handling things differently. So, you know, I don't necessarily want to say that what has happened with AstraZeneca will apply to J&J, Pfizer, or Moderna, because they may be handling things differently.
How is it that AstraZeneca ended up being the European, the one they use in Europe, and Pfizer, Moderna here? I mean, these are multinational companies. They can distribute and do things anywhere. Is it just the deals that were made beforehand? How did it come to pass?
Well, there were some pauses with the AstraZeneca trials. Like, they were trying to get their vaccine submitted for FDA approval earlier on, but then there was a problem. They had to pause the trials because there's one person that developed some neurological symptoms and they wanted to see if it was actually related to the vaccine. Turns out it wasn't. So the AstraZeneca vaccine did run into some obstacles, which delayed review via the FDA.
But yet they were using it in Europe.
Yeah, so I think because they set up separate trials, you know, one within the United States and trials also over there, and those really proceeded at different times. So therefore, the ones that were set up here were delayed as a result. So, you know, it's you have to get approval in both places.
Now, what is being done to test the longer term effects of these vaccines as tens of millions of Americans are getting them? You know, are they putting the same kind of effort into studying people 2 months out, 3 months out, 4 months out, as they did in trying to get these things raced into our hands, which of course is how they make money, because people are concerned about, well, we're diving into a new technology here in the case of the mRNA stuff, and we're all diving into new vaccines, period. How do we know what the longer term effects are? So what are the efforts being made to study that?
Well, the trials are ongoing, so there's continuing information that's coming out, and then there are other studies that are being conducted of the vaccine. We do have to keep in mind that the things that are in the vaccine, like the mRNA, that only survives in the body for a short amount of time, which then generates the immune response. So the thought is that, you know, if you're going to have any effects, it's probably going to be early on, because it's not something that stays in the body for long periods of time. But there's continuing trials and continuing studies.
Talk to me, I'm going to switch gears here a little bit, about the, it's been in the news a lot, the 6 foot versus 3 foot social distancing for children in schools. Now they're saying, oh, you only need to be 3 feet apart. Then there, as a result of that, there have been a number of articles from reputable places that have said there's no science for any of this, 6 foot or 3 foot. It just seems to be sort of like what was assumed to be a logical distance. And in fact, like in Europe and some Scandinavian countries, it was always 1 meter, 39 inches. And so there's questionable motivations for stuff that comes to the average American is almost like an edict from Tony Fauci and company, like, oh, no, 6 feet is absolute mandatory. Now 3 feet's mandatory. If there's no science behind it, why not 2.5 feet? Why not 4.1 feet?
Yeah, the 6 feet number actually came out of studies which showed that when people talk or they cough, they followed how far droplets tend to travel, like the large droplets. The large droplets tend to travel and then drop within 6 feet. So when they do those time-lapse studies. So there is science behind the 6 feet. That's the reason for the 6 feet. The 3 feet, there is concern or question like, well, you know, why necessarily reduce it by that amount? But the 6 feet number is, that's why it was established, because it was based on those studies.
Okay, continuing questions. Is there any evidence yet that people who have gotten vaccinated are still spreading the disease?
That's a good question. And that's something, that's one of the key questions. Like how, when you're vaccinated, how well are you protected against getting infected? Because we do know that the data is like, what's the chances of you not having symptoms and not having like serious COVID-19, but it's not clear how well it protects you against getting infected. It probably does protect you, but the question is how much. You know, can you actually be infected with the virus and not show symptoms, you know, even if you've been vaccinated, and can you actually spread the virus to others? And that probably, or that chance, is not clear yet.
Well, why isn't it clear? I mean, why wouldn't that be part of getting a vaccination approved?
So what they really studied is you have to look at the clinical trial and how it was actually designed. So they basically, they just looked at what happened over time, like how many people started reporting symptoms. And then they test those people and say, oh, you've got COVID-19. And they compared the numbers. And that's what was tested in the trial, because the trials were moving quickly. And that's, the, you know, that's important. You want to protect against those things. But what wasn't done was, you know, checking people regularly and frequently for presence of the virus. And that's how you check whether, you know, you were actually infected, but you didn't actually have symptoms. So that's why, you know, so there is value in reducing your risk of COVID-19, certainly. Like, that's why it's good to get the vaccine. And that's what it's approved for. But we still don't know, since they then regularly, frequently check people's swabs to see if they've actually acquired the virus.
But
so that's the difference.
Well, but you just said it's good to get the vaccine because it'll keep you from getting COVID-19. But then I also hear you say, well, you could be getting COVID-19. Maybe you won't show any symptoms of it, but the transmittability of it could be the same. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah, the difference, what I meant to say is the vaccine will prevent you from getting more severe or more serious COVID-19. So in other words, if you do actually get infected, you may have more mild cases. It's protecting you against death and hospitalization and all those bad consequences.
Right, but that which is important, obviously. We want that. But if it doesn't keep us from getting it, period, and we therefore can be contagious to other people, that seems to me to be a very important factor. Why aren't they studying that? We've had 50 million, 100 million people already have been vaccinated. Why aren't they following them up or exposing them, some of them in a trial, to COVID to see if they get it and be able to conclude? Because it seems to proceed as a society with, okay, so we've all gotten vaccinated now, or 80% of us are vaccinated, but we still don't know if we can breathe on one another. That seems to me to be a pretty important question.
Yeah, I agree. It's an important question. Most likely it probably protects against infection, but we don't know how well it actually protects. And to do those studies they're more involved. In other words, you can't deliberately expose people to COVID-19. That's not ethical. So you can't do those type of studies. But we do need more studies where they're actually periodically checking over and over again, doing the nasal swabs and checking, did you get the virus even though you've been vaccinated? And those studies are harder to conduct because, you really have to serially, like every week or even more often than that, check people's noses for the virus.
Well, so couldn't you check for antibodies to see if they had had it, or is that going to get messed up once you have a vaccine?
Yeah, so that's the challenge. So, the vaccine's supposed to generate an immune response. So, if you check the antibodies, then, that can be from the vaccine.
A lot of questions still to go here. Bruce Wiley is Executive Director of FICOR and professor at SUNY Grad School of Public Health and Health Policy. Thanks for coming on, Bruce, as always.
Thanks, Mitch.